please, Mike. We're famous people now.
Always on air.
Now that we're on the internet, we just have to assume that there's always a microphone.
Absolutely.
Somebody's always recording.
Yeah, do remember when you said that joke about Left 4 Dead?
Yeah. Left 4 Dead for Dead?
That was great.
Good times. Are we now recording?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay, so we're recreating the magic.
Yeah, okay.
Do we need to do a play-by-play?
Absolutely. Rewind everything.
Okay, so we're rewinding.
Walk it all back.
Or how about we do a summary for the audience? So Griffin and I were discussing.
I said, did you see that AMA?
And I said, no, because it was probably
boom!
Dumb.
Tough acting to Nacton. Hey, Jeff.
So
we got some podcasts going on right now.
Yeah, we do.
This is Boss Bell Radio.
Do it.
Yep.
Fell into it.
We're here.
Guest.
Podcasting.
We're going to do it. We're going to talk about a Valve AMA that didn't reveal Half-Life 3.
Maybe. But it also didn't not reveal Half-Life 3.
Half-Life 3 confirmed.
Half-Life 3 not...
Not unconfirmed.
Not unconfirmed.
Which is this is like the new threshold for fanboy excitement.
Yeah. We can neither confirm
Half-Life 3 not
nor
canceled.
Deny the existence of Half-Life 3.
I was saying before the podcast that there is probably an ARG embedded in the Reddit Ask Me Anything that people are playing right now.
If you
involving
donate,
QR codes and audio samples.
If you donate enough money to the charity that Gabe was repping for the AMA, then you get mailed a code to see a countdown timer to when the next hint of a Half-Life product comes out.
You get mailed the Oculus Rift build of Half-Life 2.
No, you get mailed the Counter-Strike Go build for the Oculus Rift.
Don't they have a VR thing? Wasn't that floating around in the news? Someone was like, hey, I went to Valve and they showed me something.
Yeah, that was really actually cool. Part of the AMA too, where Gabe said, our device is going to be awesome. And we're working with Oculus Rift and we hope they make a great product and we're making a great product. So everything
awesome.
Was just super cordial. Like, you know, what's your favorite Dota hero,
just from the
Gabe?
Way that he was like addressing the possibility of doing an AMA. I got the impression that he planned to offer nothing. Mm-hmm. Like he was like, I'm going to go in there and be nice to people, but they are not hearing a word from me about anything upcoming.
Yeah. It's counter-programming.
Like, what's that?
It's counter-programming.
Pretty much. Like going into it, in some of the interviewing that I saw, he was like, I guess I might do an AMA. It was like, oh, okay, well, don't make us force you.
Well, no, I mean, like, what's going on in March right now? No Steam sales, so what else is happening? Everybody forgot that PCs exist. Titanfall's coming out, and South Park is out, so everybody's all about the consoles.
I guess so.
Everybody forgot about it. Everybody boxed up their PCs, put them in their closets, and they're going to wait for the next PC, PC 2, to come out.
Well, to be fair, Titanfall's coming to PC.
Is it simultaneous launch?
I think so.
I think
and
it
Stick
is.
Is coming. Is already out on PC. So
yeah.
So they're getting the love too. The only thing they're not getting the simultaneous loving on to make a very obscure South Park reference is Dark Souls, which is coming in April for PC.
That was some pretty obscure references.
You know, you simultaneous loving.
No, you're talking about suck on my salty, salty dark soul, right?
No, it is a chef song.
That's
though.
The joke. I think that was the joke. Yeah.
No, it is a chef song. It's he goes talking about you and you and you and you simultaneous loving. It's a good one.
Excellent. Well, I hope that makes a cameo in this game.
Yeah, and then Isaac Hayes was a Scientologist and left the show, and then he died.
Hmm.
It's the whole thing.
Speaking of conspiracy theories, I saw Fast and the Furious 6.
How great is that movie?
Oh, my God.
I'm going to say, without explaining my work, I'm going to say that I watched that movie for my job.
Okay.
But go ahead.
Tokyo Drift is the greatest film ever conceived.
Okay.
And so I don't know how familiar you are with like the Fast and Furious mythology timeline.
I know that Tokyo Drift takes place after all of them.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So finally, like in all the films thus far, like after the third one, like in 4 and 5, you know, there'd be a wink and a nod that's like, hey, maybe we'll go to Tokyo or something like that. And there's a character in the show who dies in Tokyo Drift, but he is present and alive and not dead in the movies after that.
Yes, Han.
Yes, Han. Yeah, just he loves.
Come on, what do you think I am? Fast and Furious noob.
Yeah, no, my apologies. so anyway, Han is still alive. They make these allusions to sometime going to Tokyo. And now finally, at the end of Fast and Furious 6 or whatever the hell it was, there is a straight up scene where Han is in his car upside down and then fucking Jason Statham walks out.
And like, so perfect.
Lights Han's car on fire and it explodes. And you're like, oh, well, okay. I was like, oh, man.
And then he's like, I'm British.
Yeah.
I have stubble
everywhere.
My entire head is not stubble. Yeah, he's awesome. I'm super excited for the next one. Although, you know, Paul Walker, God rest his soul.
Yeah, okay, that's where the conspiracy theory comes in.
Okay, hit me with it. Go ahead.
Right, well, you don't need Paul Walker anymore. Because you've ended your movie that has your main star in it, and that movie was done filming, and I imagine they were filming like 7 alongside of it like they usually do. But anyway...
You're saying this was an inside job.
I'm saying somebody... Yeah. Yep.
What about 9/11?
It was Jason Statham. I'm telling you, Tokyo Drift is the third tower.
Apparently, it actually did inconvenience them during filming, and they had to. They're using his brother, and they're going to like digitally retouch his brother for certain scenes, which is super weird.
Yeah.
That's and then the Tyrese Gibson recently appeared on a TV show and was like, "Oh." Paul Walker would want us to continue the franchise because it makes all of us really rich. He actually didn't say that last part, but the first part he did.
Yeah. Well, I just thought that was super weird that the last film ends like that, and now you don't need Paul Walker anymore because you go to Tokyo Drift that doesn't have him in it.
So you've given your thoughts on the last moment of the movie, which is admittedly fantastic, but I want to hear how you felt about the movie proper.
I didn't watch any of it.
You didn't watch any of it?
No, I watched the end part from like the airplane thing. I didn't. And okay. Caught some pieces here and there, but it wasn't. Okay. It was on in the other room.
Okay, I thought it was hilarious. I really enjoyed it, like in like a very, very guilty pleasure kind of way.
Yeah, the Tokyo Drift movies are great movies. It's just a shame that you know they have the Fast and Furious name in front of them, and they're not all more like Tokyo Drift.
So you're saying the actual franchises? Well, I guess since Justin Lin took over, the concept has kind of been the same in all of them, just like ridiculous car shit happening.
I like that it's getting more crazy, where it's becoming more G.I. Joe, where you're like, it's an elite task force of automobile driving agents.
Yeah, pretty much.
The Rock, and my favorite part is when they have the Rock and Vin Diesel. Going up against each other, and you're like, oh man, one of you is superiorly more athletic than the other.
Also, this is extremely homoerotic. And The Rock is just slathered with baby oil.
Hopefully. Well, when is he not? I think that's where baby oil is harvested. It forms naturally just in the crevices of Dwayne Johnson. Yeah.
Well, that's right, Dwayne Johnson. The serious man. The serious name.
That's right.
Can you smell what The Rock is secreting from his body at all times? And can you apply it to a baby's bottom to help them not get rashes and stuff? What do you use baby oil on?
That's a waste. Why don't you just drink it like you should? Mother's milk.
Anyway, hey. Games? Video games?
Is that no, I want to talk more about Dwayne The Rock Johnson's lactations. Body lactations.
I think he probably lactates steroids, just like pure steroids.
Uncut. I thought he just like lactate like muscle milk or something. Like that's where it's like a Slurm situation where he's just being harvested for this like protein supplement.
The man looks like you could squeeze him and something would come out. Just somewhere. Something would burst and just start oozing something.
If there's some stats out there that exist that can be verified through real looking at numbers and stuff, but I think that The Rock appeared in more films than anybody and more blockbuster films than anybody in 2013.
Well, he got his career started with the illustrious Scorpion King.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah.
Best his prosthetic first starring mullet. Role.
Yeah.
With Haley Joel Osment or something? Wasn't what? Some kid in it?
No.
Or maybe it wasn't Haley. It probably was not Haley Joel Osment, but some kid was in it. I want to look it up now.
Maybe you're thinking of the Witch Mountain movie.
Oh, yeah. That was Haley Joel Osment was like 20 by that point.
Yeah, okay.
He was just voicing Sora behind the scenes.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Well, there you go. There's your segue into
We've done it.
Video games.
We're back into video games.
Thank God.
I've saved the podcast.
Whoa. Barely.
Yeah, apparently Haley Joel Osment did not set foot near this movie. I don't know what the hell I was thinking there. Yeah.
Maybe you're thinking of The Mummy.
Possibly. Three. Can I tell you what the tagline is for Scorpion King?
Please, yeah.
Are you ready for this?
Uh-uh.
Warrior, period. Legend, period. King, period.
Oh, good. Okay. People's champ, period.
How many people's elbows do you think he pulled off in that movie?
I would say one.
But it destroyed the entire world.
It did, yeah. That's what ended the franchise.
Where do you go from there?
No way. You cannot
Once he uses one, that's just kind of the end of it. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't make any more. That's right. Why they're saving the people's elbow.
Well, I think...
Like the ultimate Fast and Furious movie.
There's probably some inflation to the people's elbow. Like, over the course of The Rock's career, and now you need... You know, back in the day, one people's elbow used to do the job, but nowadays it takes two, sometimes three. It's just the way the world works. Yeah, it's Alan Greenspan is behind everything.
It's Illuminati.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Haven't you ever played Deus Ex?
Do you see what the buck is? What do you see with the eye in the buck? I don't know. I got nothing.
I love how in Deus Ex, suddenly everyone just starts talking about the Illuminati. Like, it's a thing that everyone just knows about.
Like, the original like, Deus Ex you're talking.
No, I'm talking Human Revolution.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you're just like hanging and chatting with your boss. And then eventually Adam Jensen's like, is this the Illuminati? And then everyone's just talking about the Illuminati from there on out. Like, it's just a thing that everyone thinks is normal.
No, I don't remember that part.
I just remember the way that the Illuminati just filters into that story is hilarious.
I should probably go read some backstory on that, some codex.
Have you not played that game?
Yeah, I played it. I just don't remember it being full of Illuminati references.
Oh, it sure was.
Huh.
It's a hell of a game.
I remember there was a guy who had weird skin, and that boss fight sucked.
Yeah. Remember all the Canadians pretending to be Chinese?
Nope.
Oh, that was the best part of the game.
Well, something to revisit, I guess.
That and Letitia. Although Letitia got a lot more internet buzz than the crappy French-Canadians acting like Chinese people.
Who is Letitia? What is Letitia?
Letitia was like the like racist caricature that Adam Jensen talks to on the street.
Huh.
You didn't see... Oh my gosh. I'm going to have to educate you.
Yeah. Are these just memes that you're trying to get me to look at? Is this just fucking NeoGaf saying that this is a funny thing? Or was this a real hot topic?
This is a real hot topic.
Okay.
This is like a Spencer's Gifts. Nothing?
No.
Crickets?
Yeah.
Okay. You know the so Hot Topic. You know the story Hot Topic.
Yeah, rewind this, please. Thank you. Yeah.
Okay, so there's Hot Topic. Then there's also Spencer's Gifts, which is like in the same vein as Hot Topic.
Okay.
Okay. There you go.
All right. Now if you had said this is more of like eclairs and the icing on top, then I would have got
Shut your mouth. That doesn't even make sense.
Okay. Done.
I'm looking up Letitia right now.
All right, great.
You'll see. You'll understand.
Well.
Anyway, though. Back to the subject at hand.
Speaking of IDOS video games.
Whoa. You did it. You segued.
Yeah.
Take it away. You earned it.
Well, I don't know. I think you wrote this. People were laid off.
That was the thing I wrote like 10 minutes before we started podcasting. No.
I think the Thief game came out and there were some layoffs that hit that company. So no surprise there. A company releases a game and then people get laid off because they didn't. I mean, because that's how the system works, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they could just be temp workers. I really haven't had time to explore the story, but, you know, it goes along with the media narrative of the moment, which is, oh, big companies are losing workers and or closing.
Right.
There also has been some further development on Irrational, just kind of some rumblings that it was, in fact, a studio closure because Infinite didn't hit the sales numbers they were hoping for. But. We can talk about that some more a little later. I noticed that you played the game that IDOS Montreal released.
Thief.
Yes.
Thief.
I want you to tell me all those impressions.
I got one impression here for you.
Hit me with it.
Sleep noises. Yeah, I played it for about an hour, half hour maybe, but it felt like about a week. And that game is tedious. I don't know. I can't really say more about it than that. That, you know, it's really boring.
You got a couple piles of poop in your
Hey! Whoa!
Okay.
Watch it.
Taking it back.
Yeah. I mean, now some people may find Thief to be interesting and engaging. I just didn't like that. That kind of gameplay where you're creeping in shadows and there's a high failure rate with no way to recover just doesn't feel interesting, especially like you can compare this game to Dishonored.
I think a lot of people compared it to Dishonored, although
it's an apt comparison. You know, it's both stealth games with a lot of stealthing, except this only has one path where it's only just like classic stealth, like stay in the shadows, don't get in combat, don't do anything, don't really explore because it's slow as hell. So just kind of keep going.
And it looked like most people who made that comparison, like I said, they put Dishonored on the top of the poll and they put Thief near the bottom.
Yeah, I mean you get options in Dishonored, you get linearity in Thief with no real engagement and just pretty flat world that you're in.
Yeah, and it sounded like they really were hewing awfully close to like Dishonored, except just kind of turning things up to 11 in like the wrong areas. Like I was reading about how like every district is just like there's like the whorehouse and like the friggin' brothel and then the strip club, like all the like slummy vice like places in town, where Dishonored, like, yeah, there were some kind of slummy areas, but you got a little bit of variety, and like you felt like you actually were visiting different parts of the world and encountering different strata of society and stuff, whereas this is just always like the worst parts of the world just all the time.
It also just doesn't lead with a good foot forward. Dishonored, you're immediately thrown into it with excitement and doing stuff, and this is just kind of like, hey, isn't kind of slow traversal? Like, do you play Elder Scrolls? do you like picking up coins? Well, here you go. And here's some awkward traversal. Like, here's Mirror's Edge Light.
That sucks.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm done with it. I'm not going to play it anymore. And, I mean, it looked fine. I played it on PS4. It looked fine. It, wasn't remarkable in any way. I mean, it was fine.
It didn't feel next gen.
No, I mean, it looked next gen. It just, it didn't, like, do anything. Like, it had that, like, really nice, crisp quality to it, but it just didn't do anything unique with it.
So it's like it clearly was on a next gen engine, but it wasn't. It didn't feel different.
It felt like it could have been something that was playing on a high end PC a year ago.
Gotcha. It wasn't a new direction. It didn't make you feel like you were stepping into the future. Maybe
and it didn't even give me a reason to give a darn about the Thief franchise.
Gotcha.
So, yeah.
Okay, well, that's fine. Thief.
Thief.
Griffith does not recommend.
Thief. Thief.
Indeed.
Ah, it makes my lips tickle saying that word.
You just keep saying it. Just say it for the rest of the night.
Stop.
We're just going to have a podcast of thieves.
Thieves. Thief.
Yeah.
It's a thief. I played some other games.
Tell me about them, good sir.
Well, they were pretty good games.
Hit me with them.
Okay. Well, it's been a while since we've done this, so I played Strider for the consoles.
Which of the consoles did you play it on?
I played it on PS4, but I think it was also a previous, a current, an old generation. A console with a 3 in its title.
Yep. I think they had it on Atari, and had it on...
There's no 3 in Atari. What are you... Are you crazy?
The Game Boy, I think?
There's no 3 in Game Boy.
The Neo Geo Pocket?
Yeah, there's no 3 in that either.
So how'd you like Strider?
It's pretty good. Pretty good.
Interesting, because I remember when you first bought it.
Initially,
you're saying like,
boy, does that not have a good start.
Okay.
So Strider suffers slightly at its beginning because I think it definitely lacks a big oomph in the at the beginning. You know, you jump into it and you're kind of starting at the bottom of the hill and you're running up the hill. And there's no real anything in there to say, like, hey, this is the excitement that you're going to be enjoying in the future. You know, it's like you're playing kind of a fast moving arcade-ish Metroidvania kind of a game.
So it's like there's no zero, like in that intro stage in Mega Man X, when you're running through it really slow and you've got no powers, but then Zero comes down and he has all the powers. And you're like, whoa, I'm going to be like that sometime.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's no abilities. There's no moment where you're like, oh, my God, I'm such a BA. And then, you know, you suddenly have amnesia and you forget how to be a BA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But gotcha. It's just like you jump in, you're a Strider guy, you have a sword, you can't double jump or whatever. And then you're going through your progression of bosses, and then you're unlocking these abilities, and it eventually gets to a point where you feel like you're playing a really... Well, I felt like I was playing like a really good action platformer explorer, where, you know, you're unlocking abilities, you're increasing your power, you're doing all that stuff, you're getting all sorts of new cool things, and it just took maybe an hour or two to really hit a stride.
Whoa. You're on a roll, good sir.
So I would highly recommend it. I think it's worth playing, especially if you can just kind of not be too critical of it right at the beginning. And it's just kind of front loaded with dumb. You fight this dragon thing that you're like, oh, I've heard about this from the other Strider games. Then you fight this girl named like Pee Poo. You're like, really? That's where we're going with this. And then it actually turns out you fight like P Fa and P Wang and Feng Wang, and they're all it's all just like it all just means like wind and then a direction. And yeah, so I was like, oh, okay, well, there we go. But yeah, it looks good on next gen consoles. Like it has that pretty cool crispness, lots of particle effects. There's a really cool mechanic that once you like start killing and taking no damage and doing stuff like that, like you go into this like super rage mode, Strider Vision or something. I don't know what they call it. But everything washes out, so it's just black and white and then glowing red for enemies.
That's pretty cool.
It is really cool, especially just because it'll accidentally, like it doesn't convey that that's what you do. It just happens. You're like, awesome! bosses get cooler, definitely very challenging towards the back end of that game, like
okay,
very frustrating kind of some bullet hell segments that are incredibly challenging. It is not as Metroidvania as it is being made out to be. It is.
I heard that it's a lot of like you go left and then you find a thing that lets you go right.
Yeah. I mean, I think that with this other game that I played, I think Metroidvania is becoming such just like this overused word at this point. You know, this it's like it's become like the new RPG mechanic of any game. Because you know, it does have a map, and the map does have like a kind of a grid shape structure to it, and there are keys that lock you out from certain areas and abilities that you get that lock you out from certain areas, and exploration is rewarded with more expanded abilities and stuff like that. Like you can carry more bombs or whatever it may be if you go back to this location. But like, if that is definition for Metroidvania, then like, yes, this game is that in an extremely simple way. Like, it doesn't really add anything to the game, and there's no real challenges, since it's straight up just listed on the map, like, you need this green thing to go back here. Okay, I got the green thing, great.
Gotcha. Yeah, I understand what you're saying. It's not really... It in no way seems to approach the level of, like, complexity, or, like, how integral it was to the gameplay as, you know, the original Metroid and Ika Castlevania games, where, like, having to go and explore a huge labyrinthine area was, like, actually important.
Right.
And actually central to the game, whereas in this game it's just like, oh, it's there,
right?
Like, oh, there are a couple of corridors and a grid map structure,
right? It's as much as like a Metroidvania as like what do you call that game? Guacamelee was.
Yeah, I would consider. You were saying it's like a Metroidvania game in the way that Guacamelee was. You said,
yeah, like very light, very simple, and kind of served up to you in a palatable way.
Gotcha. I would say that Guacamelee, to its credit, does have, if you want to go off the beaten path, there is some cool stuff. Like, I would say that maybe it's definitely lighter than you know, the source material that it draws from, but maybe not that light. There were some cool secrets in that game if you took the time, but you definitely did not have to at all.
Well, I guess this is the same way then.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I mean, that's the secrets of, like, you get an expanded health container isn't a cool secret anymore.
Yeah, but that is the secret that is served up in a Metroidvania game.
Right.
In that way, they're following the recipe exactly.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. That's what I'm saying. Like, it is very exact, but the way of doing so to be like, well, maybe I'll try putting a bomb on this corner that isn't indicated by any means, and just I'll take a random guess, or I'll try doing this weird thing with my abilities that I just acquired that isn't necessarily straightforward, like a bomb jump or something like that, and then I'll unlock something, or you know, I'll blow this one tile up and then the whole floor disappears and I drop through it, and now I have to wall jump based on this bird that's showing me how to wall jump. those things don't exist in Guacamelee, nor do they exist in Strider.
I see. Yeah, I mean, well, in some ways I think, at least in the case of Guacamelee, which I have experience with, it definitely streamlines things. It very clearly indicates where secrets exist. Will go into a lot of secrets are self-contained challenge rooms, which is different than the way Metroid ever approached it. And also, I would say it's very clear in its labeling. So, you know, you get your green ability, your blue ability, your yellow ability, and your red ability. Yeah. And there are walls that are literally those colors.
Yes.
So it makes it pretty easy. Yeah. But yeah. So in that way, I see what you're saying. I mean, you could argue it's just a streamlining and maybe improving of the model, or in some ways it's a departure. But yeah, I see what you're getting at.
Yeah. I mean, yes. The reward for exploration is not as great as it is in another game because, you know, in a more classic definition, because everything's already served up there for you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even in something like Shadow Complex, like there's more hidden layers that exist, even though things are kind of given to you at some point.
Yeah, well, I think, I mean, there's something to be said for either approach, but yeah, it seems like it's more popular, or it's more common now to kind of maybe spoon feed those sorts of things a little bit more, just, you know, for players who don't have as much time. I mean, like, you know, I 100%ed Guacamelee very easily, or relatively easily, whereas Super Metroid, I don't know if I ever 100%ed that game. You know, so
who knows if anybody 100%ed that game?
I did, however, I believe I 100%ed Metroid Fusion.
Yeah.
So, for what it's worth. Anyway, though. But yeah, okay. So Strider's good.
Yeah. Strider is a good game.
Okay. What about Castlevania 2?
Castlevania 2 is a good game.
Tell me about that, because it's gotten some poop in the media places, and that's all I know about it.
I think it's easy to look at that and say there's a lot of poor reviews out there for, like, reviews saying that it's not doing a great job. But I think, okay, first of all, in my opinion, reading some of the reviews that exist and hearing some of the opinions that exist, is I think people are giving a lot of credit to Castlevania Lords of Shadows than that game actually deserved. And I think that retrospectively,
that always looks like a piece of poop to me too.
the rose-tinted glasses of nostalgia people have out in full force and are wearing them, and they're saying, oh, that was such a great game. I enjoyed so many parts of it. But in fact,
Lords of Shadow?
Yeah, it was not a good game.
That game had mediocrity written all over it. I don't know. I mean, you are right that it did all right. You know, and people liked it. It got decent reviews. I don't know why, but yes, they did.
Well, because it was a good game. Like, in the same way that, like, I think Castlevania Lords of Shadow 2 is a good game. I played all the way through it. It did a lot of really cool things. It was also extremely frustrating and had a totally awesome, fun story. And it was just kind of like weird in a fun way. But I think that, you know, it was deeply flawed and definitely a deviation from, like, a Castlevania formula. You know,
the Metroidvania that we know so well.
Yeah,
Or even the classic Castlevania, you know, the kind of hard as nails.
Yeah, platformer. Now, this seems, in that way, when that game was like, well, we're not going to be quite so much about exploration and secrets. We're going to be more about combat and giant set pieces. This game is taking it in a different direction, where they're like, hey, you know what you guys like? Stealth and climbing.
Wait, but Griffin, you do not like stealth.
Yep.
I don't know how you feel about climbing, but...
Well, there are two things that are very, very obvious additions to this game than were in the previous, and that is there's a lot of climbing, like you're doing a lot of traversal, a lot of jumping around bat-infested ledges and freezing walls and climbing up them, or blowing walls up and climbing through them or whatever. And then you're also doing these really, really awkward stealth segments where it's not even stealth. Like, that's not the way to describe it. Like, you are given a situation where you say, you got to get from point A to point B. Point B has two guards on it. You need to use your ability that distracts guys, that is all it exists for. You shoot them at the distract guys. You run, you become a rat, and then you walk past them. Or you possess them. Or you just turn into a rat to begin with, and you walk around them. And it's just,
and you play as Dracula in this game, right?
You do. So
the all powerful, you know, killer of men, who apparently has to stealth past guards.
It's a really weird game. really weird. Like, take everything you know of Castlevania and throw it in the garbage. Because did you play Lords of Shadows?
I did not. Okay. I saw it and I thought, hey, this looks like a worse God of War than God of War.
Yeah, it's pretty much that. yep.
So I didn't touch it, but I know that, like, you're a dude and Dracula, some Dracula's in it.
Yep.
There's a twist at the end.
The game begins with like a 5-minute explanation of just what the heck has been happening, who all these characters are, and many of them were not even a part of the first game. It was from the handheld game, the Mirror of Fate or whatever it was called.
Okay, the shitty 3DS game that nobody cared about.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Nice. So apparently that was a big thing, as well as DLC for Lords of Shadows that explained how Gabriel became Dracula.
Okay.
And then you
so
have
are
the,
you playing
the
as the
card.
Same dude in both of them?
Yes, Jeff.
Oh,
that is the greatest and best ending to Lords of Shadows is you become Dracula.
Yeah, but have you seen that one ending where Dracula's drinking a glass of wine and then he throws it and he says this thing about what is a man?
Yeah, that's how this game also opens, which is kind of...
With what is a man, a miserable little pile of secrets?
Yeah, and then he just kills everybody, and there's a Dragon Ball Z style explosion where it pans out from the earth.
God
and
damn
the
it.
Whole continent erupts.
Griffin, I hate you for playing this game.
It's pretty good.
What is a man?
But he has like this, like, you know, an Irish brogue, so he's like, what is a man? And then he destroys a giant mechanized golem titan that's beating up his Castlevania castle.
Meanwhile, in a small, cramped office that's just filling up with papers, Iga is just crying.
He also defeats the titan. You defeat this titan by climbing up to the top of it, killing a bunch of people on your way, and then barfing blood all over these holy crystals.
Of course.
Yeah. I mean, okay. So, obviously...
It sounds way worse than when you're Dracula in the DS ones and the GBA one.
Oh, when you're
like that?
Reincarnated youth boy hot Dracula?
Yeah. Who looks like a freaky girl with white hair.
I don't know. I mean, I think I'm enjoying this game because Castlevania is not... Castlevania is a stupid franchise to begin with.
Yeah, nobody
with.
Gives
like,
a shit about the story. The story's it's garbage.
You know, for those people who are holding on to Symphony of the Night as like the greatest and best story and game ever, then okay, fine. Nothing will ever compare to that. But, you know, Lords of Shadow did some cool stuff. It had some flaws with the gameplay. It had some flaws with kind of like the difficulty curve and just the repetitive nature of the game and how it took like 45 hours to finish.
It took 45 hours to finish that game?
It was a long game.
That's so dumb.
It was a very tedious game. And okay, so this game does take off from that. Like if you enjoyed the story of Lords of Shadows, which was pretty cool, like you're a man who's going to kill these dudes who are trying to resurrect Satan, and you go and you do that, and then you find that your buddy is actually one of the bad guys, and then you end up getting this mask that lets you see heaven, and then you are lied to by God, and then you go on this other path where you now kill a demon and inherit his immortality so that you can be the immortal one instead of this other demon. Then you become the Dracula character, and
that's pretty sick.
So I mean, that's Lords of Shadows, and then you have this next game, Castlevania II, the second Lords of Shadows or whatever it is. But you know, they tie in Alucard, they tie in Trevor Belmont, they bring in the Belmont legacy. So I mean,
well, thank God that they retconned it. Because really, you know, we can all breathe easy now.
They make a more interesting story out of something that was a bunch of nonsense. Like,
no, I'm just giving you a hard time.
If you're looking to have some cool moments with previous light Castlevania knowledge, then this is pretty rad. But in terms of gameplay, like you are kind of going between two locations. One is like present day, where you're infiltrating this, like, you know, kind of sleepy town that's been evacuated because of, like, extreme biological warfare or something in the area, which is Dracula's castle town, Castlevania or whatever. And then you're also going back into Dracula's memories or Gabriel's memories of his castle, and the castle is trying to trap you in your own memories of the castle. Because it doesn't want you to leave. So you're going through castle doing exploration, you're going through real world doing exploration, you bounce back in between in the two of them, and then you can also double back and you know, use your newly acquired abilities to get other crap. So there's a lot of cool stuff there, and it's not a bad game. It just
Soma Cruz
has some really glaring flaws.
Soma Cruz.
Unfortunately, hey, you know what? Maybe Lords of Shadows 3.
Yes, hopefully.
Yeah.
Okay, so you liked it. You thought the story was intriguing, even though it was like not good, but it was intriguing to a fan. gameplay was fraught with issues. Does that sound fair?
I would say it's better if you're not a fan, because you're probably upset about it being too different or whatever. But you know, if you found the first game to be enjoyable in any way, you'll probably find some merit in this game. Is it the run out and buy it like thing that's going to save this, you know, Mercury Steam or whatever? Konami, no, not by any means. And also there's some insider developer rabble that's coming through with
That they said they knew the game was shit when they were making it.
Yeah,
pretty much.
I mean, that's all just nonsense though, coming from not probably unhappy people there, but you know, not, you know, if you want to say that the end result is imperfect, then yeah, I mean, I can't argue with that.
Yeah.
But it's good. I mean, it's a good game, and it does some fun stuff, like some just big, dumb, like barfing over crystals on a giant mech, and I don't know, like, oh, there's that quote-unquote rape scene, too, in it.
Nice. I'm glad they threw that in.
Yeah.
I can breathe easy knowing there's a rape scene.
It's uncomfortable and probably unnecessary. And definitely,
it's my favorite kind. The ones contrary, that aren't actually worth anything.
Yeah, just throw away. That's the best kind.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just like, I want it to just happen. Like, hopefully, like in the middle of an otherwise, like, you know, just pleasant scene.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Good.
I want Katamari Damacy style.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just ball rolling. Like a horrible.
And then
traumatic
someone's
scene.
Getting balled and rolled.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Yeah.
That'd be good. Okay.
Yeah.
So when Mercury Steam goes out of business, I'll get it from the bargain bin for $4.99.
When Konami goes out of business, you can
get it probably soon.
Yeah.
The company, they're just begging Kojima. They're like, please take these bags of money and keep making joke.
Well, in an effort to keep moving here, I've been kind of dragging us down. So what have you been playing, Jeff?
Well, I've been pretty busy settling into my new work life. But I have had time to play a few things. For one, I managed to finish up Danganronpa.
Danganronpa.
Danganronpa. And I really liked it. It gets super cool as the game goes on. I was having a great time with like the fusion of Phoenix Wright and you know, your 999 or your virtues. I thought the trials remained easy the whole time, which, depending on how you look at it, could be good or bad. Mm-hmm. But they managed to be like satisfying enough. And the story itself is really like, it really keeps you going. Like it picks up pace, and you know, they're always dangling that little mystery piece, you know, like, what the hell are you doing here? How did you get here? And then, of course, you know, in typical, you know, Spike Chunsoft fashion, you get to, like, you know, the last third of the game, and they just start mind-fucking you over and over again.
So now that you've finished it, can you... I know when we talked about this before, I asked, like, are there different branches
there are not.
Paths? Okay, there,
no.
there are
definitely, there is one,
definitely not.
Yeah, there is one, like, false ending, which you will probably see, and then the game immediately hops back to that, like, decision point and is like, okay, choose the other one now.
Interesting.
But otherwise, there are no fake endings.
And you press the button to save the world, and then the scientist guy's like, ha 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 ha, I already launched the space nuclear Pokemon beam.
Yeah, I'll let you think of it that way.
All right.
Close enough.
Good.
But so yeah, so the game, what was I saying? Oh yeah, no fake endings. It's worth noting that this game did come out. So it came out on the PSP first, and this got ported to the Vita. And I know it came out before Virtue's Last Reward. And I complain I've actually heard about Virtue's Last Reward from people who played Danganronpa first, is that in certain ways, some of its plot points are somewhat similar to Danganronpa. So I don't know how that will affect you if you were to decide to play it. I think it's a worthwhile game. I think the villain is really cool. I had a great time with the villain. Very well written. What is happening in the game, in the world of the game, is super cool too. And it's just fun. The characters, they grow on you. Like, I mean, not many of them are really that special, but the main character is very likable. The main female character is pretty cool too. And you know, it's just a fun little game, and it definitely there's also one really, really cool side character whom I don't want to spoil for you, but I really like this individual, and I think you'll really like this person too. But even like the dating sim elements, you know, wind up being pretty fun, and it's just like a really good, you know, visual novel style game. And you know, it's got all the stuff you've come to expect from this company, you know, kind of the people killing each other, like I said. Definitely he's got the mindfuckery in spades towards the end. You know, the central mystery is really cool.
Okay.
I would, you know, highly recommend it. And I've heard the sequel is super great. Sequel is supposed to be even better than the first one. So, and they do tie in together. So I'm very excited that they're localizing that, because I really enjoyed the game. And also, it is the game is super like it manages to make a lot of like lewd jokes, and like ridiculous, you know, like kind of like saucy humor, without feeling like fan servicey, for lack of a better word. There is one like kind of like glaring moment of fan service, but even that moment is not like super gross. It's just kind of like there. It's like, oh, you know, we're kind of going through the motions a little
bit. Is there a character that is the genius of fan service who attends the school?
There is the character who's the ultimate fanfic creator, who talks about how 2D is better than 3D. And ends up falling in love with like a computer program. But no, there's no ultimate fan service character. But yeah, there is this one particular scene where it is a little fan servicey. But the game, it manages to be the rare Japanese anime type game that doesn't kind of like gross me out and make me think like, ugh, this is just pandering to teenage boys and their fantasies. I don't know why. Maybe I just was in a particularly jovial mood when I played it. But there's just so many great like jokes with the main bear, like just like accusing all the students of being like super horny all the time. So he'll just like assume that they're like having sex, and there's just like, some of the lines are super, super funny. And I don't want to spoil it for you, but the localization is great.
Okay.
It really makes the product. So, but yeah, I had a great time with it, and I would highly recommend it.
I kind of want to just play it so I can have it to have a comparison with VLR. What you're telling me, they sound vastly different in tone. So I mean, VLR was not funny by any means. Like the comedy was definitely absent. And this sounds like a lot like more lighthearted, like a Phoenix Wright style, like everybody's a character. And obviously so. So
But at the same time, I mean, there are these moments where it goes dark, but it's part of the whole theme of the game is sort of this juxtaposition of like hope and despair, light and darkness. You know, the main character or the main villain is this bear, this remote controlled bear that's half white, half dark. So you have like these deaths and these kind of horrible tragedies, but then they're juxtaposed with like comedy. So like, for example, like whenever a killer is found, like they're executed like right in front of all the students, but they're executed in like really kind of weird and kind of funny ways. So it's a really cool little balance. But yeah, it's definitely chock full of like kind of dark humor and also like just like funny moments and weird stuff.
Okay.
So yeah, it's got a cool kind of balance there. And I think it pulls it off quite well.
Because what drew me in to VLR was the Lost style, cryptology craziness that was part of this storytelling. We were like, wait a second, what's this little? Why is there a room that's only designed to watch people in? You know, that sort of a thing from hatches and whatnot. But like, it had that feel. And I don't know, is this kind of, does that sort of a thing exist in this, or is it more of like, the murder mystery is what keeps going?
So there's kind of two parts. There's the murder mysteries, which pop up whenever, you know, students decide to kill each other. But those keep you going while the central mystery is being kind of unraveled bit by bit. And I would say it's not like 999 in that like how can I say this? I haven't played Virtue's Last Rewards. I'm just relying upon 999. But it's not like that in that... I don't know how to describe it, but it definitely has a different feel. It's not quite Lostian because you're always like, you're always, there's always a mystery popping up that you need to solve with one of the students. But there is also this central thing, which is kind of like fed to you bit by bit. Like basically like every time you solve a mystery, more of the school opens up for you to explore. Mm-hmm. Just like the game literally like tells you, like one of the bear tells you like, hey, if you solve a mystery, I'll let you explore more of the school. So it's very explicit. But yeah, there definitely are these moments where like you see shit, like you see a photograph that shouldn't exist, which is pure Lost.
Okay. That sounds, that's enough. You've said enough to hook me. Like I'm okay with that now.
Excellent. Yeah. You'll have a great time.
I would it's things great, that great don't game. Exist to exist. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh yeah. No, like I said, it definitely mind fucks you.
Perfect.
There's definitely stuff you didn't know that was happening all along.
I was the bear all along.
Pretty much. Yeah. Exactly.
Good. Excellent. So exactly like VLR. Great.
Yeah. You are the bear.
You are Griffin. The last reward.
Yes. And it's got great trophies.
Like okay, nine. Cool.
What was it? Nine purses, nine bears.
Yes.
Nine coins, nine purses, nine bears.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Yes. Otherwise, though, I've been playing the FF14 beta login screen, which is just my way of saying that I downloaded the Final Fantasy XIV beta. I opened it up, and then I was presented with a mouse cursor. And I was like, oh, no. I don't like where this is going. And so I used a touchpad to navigate with the mouse cursor, which is actually pretty sweet. I like that implementation, even though it is a little janky or weird, but I like it. Went to go sign in or something. And the game was like, hey, enter your Square Enix ID and your password for Square Enix. And yep. I was like, I don't fucking know what that is.
Memorized.
Yeah.
Use it all the time.
Oh, I just need to consult this tattoo that I have on my forearm, you know, of my fucking Square ID. So it's like, all right, I forget what it was. So I clicked it and I forgot my password. So it sent me a password to my freaking phone. You know, you can't do it within the web page that opens up. You have to do it on your phone. Mm-hmm. So it sent me a password to my phone. I went in there, reset my password, went to go log in again, and they're like, oh, hey, guess what? You haven't selected a region for your Square Enix account, so try again.
Yeah.
And I was like, God damn it. So then I did that.
That's where I stopped and deleted it.
So I did that, and then tried to go in again, and something new came up, like some new problem, and I was like, oh, fucking God damn it. Finally, I get in, and then I go in there, and they're like, oh, checking for new game client. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, how is this a PS4 game and not a PC game? Like, what? This is not supposed to be happening. This is like, I just wish I had a keyboard and a mouse right now.
Right.
But I finally got in. And I will say, okay, the graphics look great. I think it is a graphically impressive game. It clearly needs a lot of work before it will be like optimized for consoles, because a lot of the UI elements are the wrong size. I also confirmed that I still don't care about MMOs at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I don't want to give them $13 a month for this, and I'm really not sure how many people will, but more power to them, I guess. People talk about FF14, they say it's cool. If you like an MMO, then play that one, I guess.
Sure.
And it's functional, it works, although the frame rate is kind of all over the place, which is kind of weird, because I know it also runs on PS3, so I don't know how.
Is it frame rate or is it lag from just being overloaded for the beta?
I guess it could have been that. I think it was framey in an area where there weren't other PCs. There weren't other player characters.
Oh, weird.
I think it was just in looking at environmental elements.
I have a better idea. Instead of ever playing Final Fantasy XIV, let's just go play .hack.
Is that still around, the MMO version of it?
I don't know. There was an MMO version. I was there referring was to the PlayStation 2 games.
Oh, okay. Did you play this?
Yeah.
Were they good?
No.
I tried to watch .hack Sign on Cartoon Network. I believe it was on, right?
Yep.
And I... it seemed like an anime that could have been awesome and could have done some really cool shit, but just didn't.
That was one of the animes to me where I was like, yeah, so every character is just an archetype, and this is going nowhere, because anime is dumb. And that was one of the things that spelled it out for me. Like, this is really just slapdash or slap sign. Wait, what is it? Dot hack?
Yeah, it was dot hack sign, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, just like a very schizophrenic design to its storytelling. So yeah.
Yeah. I don't think anime is any better or worse than any other medium, but
oh,
it's,
I don't
it's
know,
not...
Gundam is pretty good.
Yeah, well, Gundam is pretty sweet, but I was gonna say anime has its fair share of poop for sure, but it's got some good stuff out there too. But yeah, I don't think Dot Hack was among the good stuff.
No, yeah, absolutely not. And neither was the game.
Only
in its
storytelling seemed like a mess. What was that?
Only in its concept. I thought it was really awesome.
Yeah, and the idea of the main character like being in a coma was pretty sweet, and then they just did nothing with that. Remember that?
Was that the anime?
I think so.
Okay.
Wasn't it?
I don't remember.
Something like that.
I only really distinctly remember the game where the premise was you're playing an MMO but with nobody else. So you're running around these giant towns with people who are like, hey, will you want to group up? And you're like, yes. And they're like, too bad. This is all I can ask. You want to group up?
Friends. My friends.
It was an interesting design, but yeah, let's play that.
Okay.
Only
yes.
that. Yeah.
Yeah. So FF14, I'm going to say it was a bit of a clunker for me. Seems like the most complicated crazy trash I've ever seen in my life. There were lots of lore. They were just throwing the lore at me. They were just reaching into the lore bag and just taking out pieces of lore and just flinging them over to me.
Sounds messy.
Yeah, it really was. And I could be like a Mikote or a Night Warrior or I don't know. Lots of things happening. I could be a sexy cat lady.
Okay, and that is obviously the only choice.
No, I decided to be a sexy cat man.
Oh,
I wanted a fursona.
Okay. Oh, you bastard, you.
But yeah, my dreams were cut short when I got to the very first quest giver and I tried to push a button and it launched an on-screen overlay that could only be closed with the mouse. And I was like, no, just no.
Yeah.
So, that's all I'm playing for modern games. I have touched a few other older games, which I can expound upon a bit if you want me to.
Yeah, maybe just mention them, see if there's anything.
Sure. Yeah, I'll give a quick thing for each one. So I've been playing Risk of Rain, which I don't know if we ever talked about on this podcast. Have we touched on it at all?
No.
Okay. It came out in 2013, kind of in the heyday of like, hey, everyone, roguelikes are super cool right now.
Oh, yeah, that's the heyday. That's when everybody says, hey, roguelikes are pretty cool.
Yeah, a lot of action-y roguelikes, faster-paced roguelikes.
Oh, roguelike-like.
Yes, roguelike-like.
Like so. Roguelike.
Yeah, I like you, but I don't roguelike like you, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
It is 2D. The basic hook is this. You're dropped into a level. You need to find the teleporter to get out, you know, kind of typical sort of, you know.
A randomly generated friend zone?
Yeah, exactly. Find the randomly generated exit, get to the next level. Next level's harder than the previous one, blah, blah, blah. The big hook, though, is that you're timed, and as time goes on, the random enemy spawns, you know, enemies just randomly spawn all the time. And as time goes on, the enemies that spawn get harder. Mm-hmm. And the only way to beat the level, you have to get to the teleporter, and then you have to survive 90 seconds and then kill every remaining enemy in the level. And the way that works is once those 90 seconds are up, enemies stop spawning. So it's to your benefit to get to that teleporter quickly, because if you don't, you'll quickly get overwhelmed by the difficulty. I played a couple hours of it. It's a really fun game. But I have not been able to get past the second level because it's hard as balls.
Wow. Well, if you can't do it, I probably can't even get past the start screen.
Well, hold on a moment, because it's actually, it's got a co-op mode and you can play it over the internet. And I want to play with someone someday. So I'll pest you about that sometime. It's got a great feel. I've only unlocked one class so far, but he's got some
what
really
other
cool
classes
abilities.
Are there?
I only have the. What's that?
What did you play as, and what other classes are there? Like, it's like a roguelike. So is it your typical like melee guy, ranger guy, magic person?
Well, there it looks like there's at least 10 classes. So I'm sure there's a lot going on. All of them only have 4 abilities. Like four types of abilities. And you control them with like the triggers on the Xbox controller. And it is very much it's fast paced, it's actiony, so it's not like, you know, turn based, slow, you know, kind of slog. The dude I played as, he had a shotgun attack, a machine gun attack, a regular gun, and then like a tactical dive that made him had invulnerability frames. Mm-hmm. He's like the most basic, you know, white bread class. But I'm looking forward to someday unlocking more once I actually am able to beat the game. But it's a super cool game. I'm actually having a really good time with it. I think I picked it up over the Steam holiday sale for like $2 just because I was like, deals. But yeah, you know, if anything new or exciting comes out of that, I'll definitely update on the podcast. But it's been my distraction of the moment. Mm-hmm. And then I'm also playing, I've been kind of dipping into Donkey Kong Country Returns again with Jessica, actually, just because, you know, Tropical Freeze is coming out and having something to play together is nice. And, you know, I guess I'm warming to it a bit. We've talked about it before and how, I don't know, it's not my favorite game in the world, but I don't know. It's got some good levels in there, I guess. Yeah. But I may pick up Tropical Freeze soon because just so much buzz and my Wii U feels so lonely. It just needs something. But
just start making naughty Miiverse posts. That's all you need to do, right?
Just go on the Defoeverse. Are you familiar with the Defoeverse?
No, what is that? Willem Defoeverse?
Yeah. Are you familiar with Podtoid?
No.
The old Podtoid? Okay. Uh-huh. Well, Destructoid had a podcast. You know, Jim Sterling was on it along with a couple other people. And they had like this running gag where they would do pitches for Willem Dafoe movies. Mm-hmm. And they'd just be like utterly absurd, like grotesque, horrifying movies where Willem Dafoe would just like make like awful sounding screams and just be an overall creepy dude because he just is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then once
like
the Wii U
Spider-Man.
Came out. Yes, exactly. Godspeed, Spider-Man, you know, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Once the Wii U came out, they declared that the Raving Rabbids Miiverse channel or whatever was now the Defoeverse. And like people responded by just swarming it with like pictures of Willem Dafoe and mm-hmm. references to the podcast and just like all kinds of ridiculous Willem Dafoe related content. And Nintendo, for the most part, left that stuff up. So now that part of Miiverse is the Defoeverse. There's a couple other communities where the same thing happens.
Yeah, like Funky Bone.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. Must be at least this funky to go with the barn. But anyway, that is what I've been playing.
Cool.
Yeah. Yep. So, anything else you wanted to touch on in that regard? I noticed you had a couple things written down here.
I played Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2 for the PlayStation 1. On last Tuesday night when we didn't podcast, and I beat the game, stayed up till 3 a.m. It was really awesome.
That's a great choice.
It was
a very adult choice.
It was really good. Yeah. It was really good.
It is. Don't you wish they're going to make another one of those? Except, unfortunately, it's on mobile.
Huh. Yeah, totally. Exactly. So Tony Hawk from Tony Hawk Pro Skater has came out and said that there's going to be a new Tony Hawk game coming to mobile. Now, I don't know if it's mobile only, but it definitely seems like it is a mobile first and foremost from his verbiage that he's used.
Yeah, probably.
Exciting to bring this franchise to a device that everybody is using all the time, so.
I will only play it on mobile if I can play it with my
Engage emulator.
No, with my I want to be playing on my mobile phone but use that giant skateboard peripheral that came out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it totally worked. The thing was great. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty sad.
Tony Hawk Shred.
I wish they would just make another one of those games, like another good Tony Hawk game.
Well, they made the HD edition where they HD-ified Tony Hawk 1, 2, and maybe 3, and it tanked.
Yeah. Didn't it have some kind of problems with it?
From what I can remember, just anecdotally, people saying it didn't feel the same. So, okay. A lot of that game is your timing, the feelings on the releases of button presses, rotations, and all that. So, I mean, if it's not there, it's not there,
Well, I think what it boils down to is, it's Tony Hawk's concept or whatever, but also it's the studio that made it, without the people who worked on it, working on it, it's not going to feel like the same game, obviously,
Well, so. Pull those guys out of making the next Call of Duty game. What else is never soft up to?
I don't
Guitar
know.
Guitar
Hero's
dead.
Who knows how many of them are even left? Yeah. Really? Like, they're probably all just a bunch of new people with...
who don't even skate.
Yeah, seriously. But one of us should pick up Ollie Ollie. That is a... Have you heard of that?
Yeah, I've heard of it. I'm familiar with it. And yeah. I think it's too much right now.
It's too much. It's too emotional.
Yeah. I'm not ready for it.
Maybe I'll buy it and I'll talk about it and tell you if it's a worthy successor to Tony Hawk.
No, it's like $12 or something, right?
It's
more
maybe.
Than $2, which I think is more than what it should be.
You haven't even played it.
Okay, it is a left-right moving catapult-style game, but you're doing skateboard tricks for the longest run possible.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So.
I hope it's not just an endless runner, because that would be a super letdown.
Well, I think it ends, but it's then like a high score chase, too, based on your tricks. Gotcha. So.
Okay, so it's like a downhill, like just like a straight downhill.
Yeah.
Oh, that kind of sucks.
I mean, from all accounts, it's good. It's just like... Yeah.
It's not the same.
Yeah. Runners don't have a soft spot with me, so maybe you will enjoy it more.
I do love Bit Trip Runner. I've been playing a little bit of that, too.
Really?
Finally got to the last world, yeah.
Mm. Well, let's see if we can tie Star Wars Battlefront 2 into anything here, because we'll find a way for a night, and that's a game.
Was it a good game?
No.
People are pretty excited about there being another one.
I hope there is, because it seems kind of cool, except for the fact that Battlefront 2 is all like prequel characters and stories and whatever, so...
So has it been wiped from the canon?
Yeah.
Didn't you hear about that? How they killed the entire canon.
It's all dead. No, they killed the expanded universe is what.
Yeah. Sorry, not the entire canon. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey,
Yeah.
That's fine. Jar Jar.
Han was still frozen in carbonite.
Yep. Yeah. Anakin Skywalker is just a weird shaped German man with an accordion mouth.
I think that George Lucas will find a way to release director's cuts of the non-George Lucas Star Wars movies. And then he'll replace all of the
from
original
the
copies
grave.
With that. He'll be like, I actually altered the master because I'm an asshole.
Yeah.
Anyway, though.
So that game, it was fine. It was fun.
Here we go. I'm gonna go ahead and tie this over. Are you ready for this?
I am so ready.
Speaking of franchises that sometimes feature giant mechanized vehicles, Titanfall.
Titanfall. Okay. Yeah. I saw two choices there, so I didn't know which one you're going for.
Oh, yeah. I guess we could go with two choices there. Shit, Titanfall and Metal Gear Solid.
Oh,
one after
baby.
Another. Just roll off those licks.
Do it. Yeah. Nail them. Okay. Metal Gear is the easier one. Metal Gear Solid Ground Zeroes has had a price drop for its physical version.
Yeah, its physical version. So I saw that headline. They're like, oh, we're lopping $10 off Ground Zeroes. I was like, great. I can actually feel okay about buying the digital version now. And then it was just to make the physical version the same price as the digital version. And I was like, wow, these numbers are really quite arbitrary, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. So it still remains that it's $29.99
for any version, pretty much.
It's $19.99 for digital old school console, and then $29.99 for digital
else, I guess.
PS4 and or digital current gen and box copy current gen.
Yeah, I if it can even be had for $20, I mean maybe it's 20 on old gen, but I didn't even know it went that low. But I thought
it was 20 for the old gen digital version.
Maybe, yeah. But yeah, it's high is the point.
Yeah.
but yeah, I thought that was more of a big deal when I first read it, but just knowing, like I said, that they only hit the physical editions with the price drop, kind of leaves a sour taste in my mouth.
I'm happy with it. I mean, because I was planning to buy the physical version. So
you monster.
Now that's cheaper, so I'm happy.
You crazy monster.
Yeah. I like Metal Gear. I'm stupid.
Yeah. I like Metal Gear too. Well, you know what? I'm also stupid. I own a Pikachu 3DS XL, and I bought a Bravely Default Collector's Edition that had a deck of AR cards in it.
Oof.
It's okay. We're all friends here.
Well, speaking of price reductions, Xbox One has had a price reduction.
Yes, in the UK.
Yeah, only. Yes.
Yes.
So to speak.
By £30.
Right.
Yeah. Which, as I understand, was something that was kind of a long time coming. Like, people felt like it was ridiculous, the initial price they'd set.
Yes, yes. However, you know, it was packed in with a copy of FIFA 14, whatever, for the Xbox One. And now for American folks who think that their consoles are still vastly overpriced, a copy of Titanfall will be included via code in new purchases of Xbox Ones.
Yeah, and to me, that just seems like such a no-brainer. Like, of course they should pack in Titanfall.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like there was just a button in Xbox headquarters that said, pack in Titanfall, and someone broke the glass and hit that button.
Yep, exactly.
but, you know, good decision. I'm sure it will only help them. Whether or not it will close the gap, I don't know, honestly. I have no idea. I don't know what Titanfall will do. Like, I don't know if it will make waves. I mean, I know the beta was a huge hit. People liked it. But what effects it will have on the market at large, I have no idea.
Yeah. Will people see this device as a $500 Titanfall vehicle? Since at this point, I mean, what else is there?
Yeah. Well, the question, I think what the big question is will Titanfall capture the market, like the casuals and the people who don't really buy games that often in the same way that Call of Duty will? Because I think among the enthusiasts, I think the PC beta will hurt them because I think uptake on the next generation consoles is just going to be slow, you know, just because. And I think that having a superior version available on PC on day one is just trouble for them. And I think that you know, having the PC beta that went on, it's just a different environment than it was, you know, some years ago, and I think that a lot of the enthusiasts are going to go there. So I think if it's going to be a success, it needs to get a lot of the frat crowd in. And I don't know if they're coming in at 500 or not. We'll have to see, I guess, is the bottom line.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think this is going to be the system seller like you were alluding to there. I don't think so. We're going to see a pretty good bump in numbers, but I don't think this is going to be like the gateway to the average player. Like, this isn't the Wii Sports for the Xbox One, you know. This is, I mean, and not even in that like gross exaggeration. Like, I don't think that this is going to be the device that's like, it's in a home everywhere. Now you can watch your cable, you can watch The Price is Right while you're playing Titanfall in the smaller screen window. Snap to the side, Grandma.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think it would ever, you know, have that level of appeal. But my question, I guess, would be, is will it draw in the same audience that COD drew in, basically?
No, because you have, there'll be an Xbox 360, you know.
I guess
the version
is
coming out, and that'll be something that's like, well, you know, I'll play it on this one, on this system while I have it, and then once the Xbox One has its price drop, I'll get it and I'll play it on that. Like I'm saying this is not going to be the game changer.
But do you think the Xbox 360 version will be the reason why it won't be? Because I feel like that's being done by a different studio. Like, is that really even the same product?
I think that if you're talking in terms of, like, will it appeal to the bro gamers, the Call of Duty heads, like those folks, I think that that sort of a thing, it exists purely in word of mouth. So when you have people who are online on their 360s playing games and talking, and then talking about Titanfall, you know, those folks who don't want to jump out and buy that next system will say, well, we'll just check it out on this, on the 360. And then, you know, the more educated group will say, like, well, it's not by the same people, so it's not going to be as good. And it's like, well, yeah, but whatever, I'll wait for the next one. Because, you know, there were only like 14 different Call of Duties, so, you know, each one gets better.
Yeah, I mean, but I don't know. I think you might be giving the dumb, you know, fratty COD players like a little bit too little credit, you know, like I think they must be at least smart enough to know like what makes a decent shooter and what makes a shit shooter, because like, you know, a COD gets crapped on a lot, but it's mechanically sound.
This is a different shooter. This isn't COD anymore. Call of Duty will always be there for those people to go back to as their, you know, as their, you know, bread and butter, comfort food game. But if you're saying like, oh, it's a different studio, these guys made original Call of Duty, and now the same original rivalry between Treyarch and Infinity Ward exists, yet in this different fashion, where they're making the same game, one for new consoles, one for old consoles, but really, well, I think it's a splinter group, and you're getting into too inside baseball, where the easy solution is say, okay, well, this game is better than this game. Fine. Like, we understand that it's on a 360 to begin with. It's not going to be good as Xbox One.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I guess I'm giving them more credit than I should, maybe. But I feel like they would probably be, at least the people I'm thinking of, might even be smart enough to know, like, oh, like, this is the one by the guys who made Call of Duty. Like, I'm sure that's going to be in the ads or something like that, you know?
Oh, yeah, it is. I mean, that is, like, from the guys that brought you Call of Duty, the games you liked. That is being slathered all over the place, but...
Yeah. It'll be interesting. I mean, I see where you're coming from with that other version kind of hurting them. But at the same time, like, it's not, you know, it's been delayed. It's not really on the horizon right now. Like, who knows when it's coming out?
It's like, 2 weeks after.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Fuck, I guess I was wrong about that. I thought it was delayed for some undetermined length of time.
I'm fairly certain it's less than a month.
Okay. So in that case, that changes my calculus on that. I had no idea.
I mean, I think so, at least. Now I'm wondering too, but...
I'm stealth researching while we talk.
I still believe that if that is a situation that's going on, that you're... Your Call of Duty head gamer is not going to be swayed to buy an Xbox One because of this game. Like, you can get that game on the old console. You don't need to, you don't need to get rid of your old COD box to get the new one, because you want to still be able to play your favorite, like, 1, 2, 3, whatever mood suits you. And you have all your map packs and all your friends are on. And if you make this jump, you're making a big jump just to Ghosts, which isn't as good, apparently. And then you're also, like, isolating yourself so you can't play any of the other gold games. And more importantly, what else is coming out for the Xbox One in the next year?
Nothing announced yet, I mean, both of those consoles don't have much on the horizon now.
Gears of War.
Yeah, and I think that certainly among the, except for Titanfall, which I think definitely caters to enthusiasts well as casuals.
Yeah.
I don't see a lot for like really hardcore enthusiast players right now on Xbox. I think that like some subsection of gamers are being catered to on like the indie scene for PS4, but there's not much on either console right now. I think that the indie scene is giving the PS4 a bit of a heartbeat, I guess I would say. Whereas Xbox, you know, not much going on over there. But again, nothing much going on either side. But yeah, you are right, by the way, about Titanfall. It's March 25th. And the cynical side of me is like, oh, they put that 2 weeks afterwards because they want to wait until the big sales window, you know, for, you know, how like most of a game's sales occur within like the first 10 days.
Yeah.
It's like the cynical side of me is like, they just want to wait until those 10 days are over because they think, you know, that'll save them from cannibalizing the sales of the new console. But yeah, I mean, given that information, I guess I could see a lot of potential holdouts for sure.
Yeah, you know, I agree.
Yeah, they'll read the good Xbox One review and they'll be like, "Oh, I'll get that on, you know, on 360 when it comes out in 2 weeks."
Yep. Yeah. Yep. And then you say, "Oh, I like this. I'm ready to get Titanfall 2 on the Xbox One."
Yeah. Yeah. Plus, that's going multi-platform though. They've already basically said as much. They're like, "Yeah, we'll make Titanfall 2 for whatever we can." Hopefully.
Yeah. Unless Microsoft once again, you know, money pays out the butt for.
Which they could do. I mean, if that could be a viable strategy for them.
Yeah. Without getting, I mean, I don't, we could talk about this.
We could prognosticate, you know, 8 years from now, but yeah.
I just think that doing this pack-in is crazy. Like, oh my God.
Really? Tell me more about that.
I just think it's crazy for EA. Like, for EA to be like, yeah, okay, yeah, we'll take all the, like, how much did they receive, like, I would be fascinated in hearing what the business dealings were happening there, where it's like, okay, well, this game is only on Xbox One. We know it's going to do gangbusters, but how big is your install base, and how much are you going to give us to put this game in a million, you know, containers?
Like, I mean, for them, I think it's just a huge write down. I think that, you know, it's like, here, you know, EA, take this big bag of money.
Yeah.
We'll put your games in our boxes. I mean, for EA, I think it's just nothing but, you know, it's gravy to them. You know, right. They're like, oh, great. We just sold, you know, a million copies of Titanfall.
Right. I just want to know, like, how big was that big bag of money? You know,
I don't know.
Like, and what is the thought process on the Microsoft side to be like, well, we are going to have to include this in our product. Like, the only thing that really was going for it, in terms of legs for games, like, now we've just shoved that in there and now it's a pack in.
I mean, considering the piles of money that company is swimming in, I mean, you know, they just throw it around like it's nothing. So it'll be a hit to the division for sure. But, you know, they thought it was necessary, so they're doing it. Mm-hmm. And hopefully it does something for them. I don't know. We'll see.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
But yeah, it's definitely an interesting move. I do wonder, does this kind of tie their hands on a future price cut? That's kind of my question. I guess they could take it out. They could remove it as a pack-in.
Sure. I mean, you sell through your units that have a Titan thingy on the cover, and then you can make a price cut. I mean,
yeah, and if you're like Sony, then you just you sell your machines double boxed, so that way you can do pack-ins and then put another box outside of the box that has the picture of the pack-in on it.
Great, do it. Then that's how I got my. Off.
That's how I got my Super Slim. It had Uncharted 3 packed in, even though I already owned it. I just quickly sold it, but it was a box inside of a box. And then inside of that box was a funny looking PlayStation that I adore. Anyway,
I'm looking for potential segues here, but I got nothing.
Speaking of
boxes and boxes.
Small install bases making up for large percentages of sales. Nope. can we talk about that in-app purchases thing?
Yeah, go for it. I'm not familiar with what you're referring to.
Sure. So I have a little tidbit on here, something that I thought was interesting and I thought we could talk about a little bit. So in the world of mobile, you know, the wave of the future, there was a recent stat released that in free-to-play apps, 0.15%, that's not 1.5, that's not 15%, that's 0.15% of users account for half of all in-app purchases. So the business model of the future for selling games free-to-play is sustained by 0.15% of users, which means that all the bullshit hoops you have to jump through, all the waiting for shit, all the, you know, stupid crap that you have to click on and get rid of and spend your micro points on is all for 0.15% of users, which I think is ridiculous. And I wanted to know if you have any, like, do you react at all to that number? Like, does that
What's the colloquial term for that? Like the
whales.
The whales. Yeah.
Yes, the big spenders.
Yeah, who drop like the best value price of like lifetime gold is $100, best value.
Yeah, they're the ones who bought, you know, who spent all, you know, $3,000 to buy all of Forza Motorsport Horizon's cars.
I guess what's surprising to me is how small that number is, since I know a lot of people who have spent hundreds of dollars on mobile games, and I know a lot of kids who the gifts are no longer like, you know, Apple gift cards to buy songs. It's now like a $50 Apple gift card to buy a bunch of in-app purchases for a video game.
God,
and
that's
like
so
kids
sad.
Bragging to each other about how many hundreds of dollars they spent on this game. So I'm surprised that number is so small.
Yeah, you must just be surrounded by a rare breed of people.
I guess. I mean, or just the download numbers are so inflated through that it's skewing all that.
Maybe. I wonder what percentage of those users are kids. I wonder, you know, just spending their parents' money.
Well, not something you'll ever be able to track, since you have to be 18 to have an iTunes account.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah,
so
I guess
zero.
I worry. Yeah, I worry about how sustainable is this model? Like, is the mobile model? Does the mobile model hurt the industry at large? Like, does what's happened with you know, the App Store and 99-cent apps, is that going to hurt our hobby? Is that gonna fuck us over in the long run? Basically,
why would you think it would? Why is that a concern for you?
Well, I think the downward pressure on pricing, it's so, like, how do these people make a return? Like, if this is their market segment that they're pursuing now, like, if this is, you know, you see all the major Japanese developers are making forays into free-to-play, and you've got EA is all over the free-to-play market. What does it mean for the types of titles that I think we tend to be more drawn to, which maybe would represent, you know, more sizable investments than most mobile titles? You know, I mean, obviously, you know, I play a lot of indie games that are made by one dude or something, but, you know, we play games that don't cost 99 cents or don't cost free with in-app purchases. And I wonder if, you know, looking at the trend of this, I wonder if any of those kinds of games could exist in a world of 99 cents in in-app purchase. You know what I mean? Like, maybe. No, it's just not.
I guess. Well, based on what you're saying, isn't this showing that people aren't spending money on their dumb, you know, toy games with a bunch of gated garbage and nonsense? Like, it is just a small subset of crazy people who are doing that, based on that?
Yeah, letter? I mean, I guess maybe people could look at this figure and think about it and decide to stop pursuing this model. I just worry that we're getting cornered in a sense, that people feel like they have to move to this model and they're chasing it like ever elusive profits. Like, I feel like we're kind of in this sort of race to the bottom in mm-hmm. terms of pricing. And there's just kind of a mass devaluation of games going on.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I think there is, as you said, a mass devaluation with games. But I think, you know, it's also the pendulum swing of like the arcade versus, you know, the 90s and 2000 high budget game studios, and now it's swinging back in the other direction, and we'll see it go back in the other, you know.
Ever the level-headed one. So you think the market will correct, essentially?
Yeah, I mean, the boom of, you know, the handheld device that's in your, the best gaming device is the one that's on you all the time, you mm-hmm. know, eventually will sag and you know, we'll realize it was just a flash in the pan and saying like, mm-hmm. oh man, remember when everybody used to play that weird white little box where you'd shake the remote controller at it and grandma loved it? It's like, yeah, now people aren't spending thousands of dollars on Mario Jump for you know, the iPhone.
You shut your mouth. Mario Jump is a great game.
Mario teaches one-handed typing.
Yeah, you're right, really. I'm sure that things will correct. I spend probably too much time just thinking about and wondering about, like, is what I like, is my hobby in danger, and you are your look at it, or your perspective is a very level headed one. And
Lords
one
of
that
Shadows
I would do
too
well
will
to
always
internalize.
Be there waiting for you.
Really, once Lords of Shadow 2 came out, really, there was you don't need to make any more games.
No, it's done.
Everything that could be done in a video game has been explored.
Yeah, it's the magnum opus of video games. But no, I think that you are right to worry about the situation at hand, like especially with, I think in terms of thinking about the economic side, like it is putting into young people's heads right now that game prices are free as a standard, are $0 mm-hmm. as a standard, and then you know more like a $10 game is almost on a different level, and then you know every game should have the option to be able to pump money into it. You know, we've seen things like that with Dead Space 3 going over as almost a failure, despite kind of embracing those concessions.
Yeah,
but I, you know, it'll be interesting in 10 years down the road. Will the enthusiast crowd be of a different mindset? You know, and I would say no. I would hope not. But then, you know, that's just me saying, like, everybody will be reasonable.
Yeah, and again, we could sit here all day and think and wonder, but it's hard to say. But it is worrisome to see, you know, kids learning, you know, that games don't cost money.
Right.
That, you know, that you can get everything you want for free, and the burgeoning budgets, and it's just, you know, pressure on all sides. I don't like that pressure.
Right, but I mean, okay, think of it this way too, though. What if, okay, you're saying like games are free, but in some extent they're not. And this mm-hmm. might be the life lesson that we're having to deal with for the first time at this juncture, where you essentially are paying for a subscription, or you're paying for a console that has a bunch of built-in games or the options for games. So, you know, You think of it like, well, Angry Birds Lite is a free game, but how are you able to play Angry Birds? Well, you need to have a $600 device or $300 device. And then, mm-hmm. you know, if you want to be able to play Angry Birds online with your friends, you need to have a Wi-Fi connection, or you need to have a 3G connection, or, you know, a wireless data connection. So, you know, you're already, like, obviously kids can't do that.
It's, yeah, they don't see those costs,
but,
yeah.
There will be that thing.
Yeah, and I think you're right, Griffin. I think that at some point people will understand as the free-to-play model, you know, matures, and as people mm-hmm. become to understand it better, they'll be like, oh, shit, like free-to-play actually is not free.
Right, right.
You know, thing that we've already figured out.
Yeah.
But
I think an interesting
yet.
Parallel might be something like MMOs of the mid-90s or mm-hmm. late 90s, and you think of it like, okay, you're I'm just taking my own experience here, and it's like let's say that I played Ultima Online when I was, you know, a young teenager.
You'd be the coolest teenager I ever met.
Sure would be. I mean, imagine how cool I'd be, like total fonz. But so the cost that you wouldn't be aware of would be like the cost for a PC, the cost for the subscription. You just get this game and you're like, oh, this is pretty fun. I like playing it. And then, you know, within that, you had to pay hundreds upon hundreds of dollars for a PC that would be able to play that game. Then you'd have to be able to pay for your second phone line to dial up into your internet 56K modem. To play that stuff. So there's two things you're just not even aware of the price on. All you're seeing is like, I paid $30 and now I can get this game for free. Or I ripped this ISO or whatever. Like I can mm-hmm. play this for free. And then what if you had the option to then pay $10 through eBay and get $1 million in gold? Like that. What I'm trying to say is that did happen. Mm-hmm. That's surprise. I did that. And look at me now. You know, it's like, you know, kids have the device, they have the subscription, they have the game or games, and they have the opportunity to give more money than it, or give additional money to it, and they're doing it. And if that was existent early, you know, in game history, then it's not going to really be a huge deal later in game history.
Gotcha. So people will learn from there, from what they do now, and they'll realize that it's shitty.
Right.
It's a good outlook.
Be like, man, I can't believe I spent $100 on Clash of Clans. Like, I'm such an idiot. And, you know, at that point, they're playing, like, Final Fantasy 20, and, like, these are real games.
Well, you know, by then, FF will be dead and buried, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any way they're making it to 20, honestly. But we'll see. That's a story for another time.
Final Fantasy.
Indeed. Okay, I think that addresses my concerns pretty well.
Good. Well, in happier news.
Yes. Yes.
Twitch beat Pokemon.
Indeed. And the nobody unthinkable. Watched it. Nobody watched it because it happened at 6 in the morning.
It was pretty early. Bastards. Yeah. It was pretty early.
Yeah. Now they're playing Crystal.
Yeah.
Which, you know, they got a following still. They got about 50,000, I think, on average, which is a bit lower, but it's fun. I check in from time to time. It's definitely not quite as magical as the original, but
no.
Just to have actually completed it, there's so many moments where, like, I'm baffled that they actually managed to get past them.
Yeah.
Like the friggin' Safari Zone.
Yeah.
It's just the weirdest thing.
There are some, it is some fascinating, that is book fodder right there. I mean.
Oh God, yes. I am extremely hopeful that shit will show up on Fangamer that references it.
Yeah.
Like Helix shirts need to be there just like yesterday.
You start just get your Cafe Press shirts for Helix stuff right now.
Yeah.
Strike while the iron's hot.
Exactly. Yeah. So that was awesome. The e-bards, you know, they did plenty. So much art. So
oh
much
my
great stuff.
God, I fell in love with that art that people are making for the characters and the, like the comic strips that people were making, there were some just awesome things out there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely.
Trying to explain to anybody is completely impossible.
Yes, we have both attempted with their significant others.
You're like all terrain Venonat, hilarious, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Did this picture. Like, yeah. What's wrong with you?
Yeah, we were met with, at least in my case, my girlfriend claimed to have understood it all. But there was scorn.
Oh, gotcha.
No, there wasn't scorn, but there was definitely they just don't understand. Cry a single tear.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Like you weren't there, man. Yeah. You don't really know.
Yeah, exactly. It's the evolution argument applied to Pokemon.
Absolutely.
But yeah, it's awesome. It's super cool. I'm hopeful that more crazy shit like that will be popping up soon this year. You know, something else to capture the public's imagination.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely could see that again. But yeah, what else is happening in the world?
Well, there is Persona 5 has been confirmed to come. To be coming to North America, as well as all the other Persona games, which, you know, surprises absolutely no one. You've got Persona Q, Persona Dancing All Night Long, Persona Ultimax.
Yes,
maybe
Persona Perfect Works.
Yeah, whatever that. Yeah, exactly. Persona Director's Cut.
I hope you're gonna buy Dancing All Night.
Maybe.
Do it.
If between all of the spin-offs, that would be the one I'd go for, since I don't give a crap about Persona Q, nor the one I forget about.
Persona Arena.
Oh, yeah. Ultimax seems like, I mean, I own Persona Arena. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a visual. It's there's a lot. I don't want to get into this, but yeah, that game might be better in a Wikipedia article than it is
really?
Actually paying $30 for it. So
it's not a good fighter.
It's fine. It's really good. But are the, you know, two or three new characters they're adding to it, and I don't know. Like, will it be really worth another $30 for that game? I don't know. Probably not. Is what I'm saying.
Yeah, not that this has not been known before in fighting game territory.
Yeah.
It's pretty much par for the course.
Well,
but yeah,
I mean, if you're specifically citing like Capcom's actions, at least you could upgrade your copy from one to the next for $10, and that's a lot more realistic than charging for copy.
Does that carry over for each version? Like you can go from
each
one to the next one for another $10?
Oh, yes, you can.
Oh, wow. I had no idea.
Yep.
That's actually okay.
Yep.
Thank you, Capcom.
Yeah. Not the worst thing ever.
Yeah, I'm genuinely surprised when a giant Japanese company doesn't do something horrible.
Yep. From the guys that brought you no deletable save files in Resident Evil Mercenaries comes a moderate discount.
I thought you were going to say comes deletable save files in Resident Evil Mercenaries, because that happened.
Yeah, oh, true.
But yeah, yeah, you should definitely buy Dancing All Night. I would be so delighted if you did.
Yeah,
and then find a way to do this or this new game of it immediately.
Okay.
But anyway.
Yeah, we'll do that. Yeah, I'll just take a handheld. I'll just use my iPhone and stream it.
Exactly.
The Twitch. Twitch plays Dancing All Night.
I also liked how Persona 5 called the Oscar win with "You Are a Slave."
Oh boy!
It was a rather stark way to open the trailer, which I feel probably worked better in Japan than it did in the U.S.
Yep.
But I don't know. I feel like for some reason I want to get hyped for Persona 5 because I think I've discussed my difficulties with getting into Persona, but sure. I want to be hyped. I want to get involved in the series. I want it to grab me. So maybe that'll be when I really give it its chance, when it comes out in 2015 for PS3.
Yeah.
Those crazy bastards.
Yes. They know what they're doing. Did you play Catherine?
I did not.
You should go play Catherine.
Okay. I'll grab it on discount sometime.
Cause if you don't like Persona games,
mm-hmm.
maybe try Catherine and see if that kind of like breed of crazy sits with you and get hyped in a different way to be like, these guys made that, now I'm ready for whatever's next.
Yeah And can I skip all the box pushing puzzles?
No, but you can beat them really quickly because they're not hard.
Okay, well, I'll be beating it really quickly if I'm playing Catherine.
Oh, you look at that box art. Get your giant body pillow and go to town.
Oh yeah. I'll just get it from that UFO catcher. It won't be the only thing I'm catching.
Oh, baby. Or pitching.
Nice.
Nice. What else is... Oh, so I think in some of the biggest news was Batman Arkham Knight reveal from Game Informer's cover. And
which
then
happened not long before we started talking.
A pretty sizable and reasonable leak that detailed a ton of information about this game.
Yeah. The main thing seemed to be, two big things, I guess. New villain, which I guess Rocksteady made up, which is kind of cool, I guess.
Oh, is that true? Okay, so now this is where I think that I'm not sure where misinformation is combining with information.
Yeah, it's not clear. I mean, from the Game Informer article, I guess, it said it was a new villain. It, they might just be saying that because that's the kind of thing that I could see them lying about.
A new villain to the franchise. Like, I read that as it is a villain who we haven't interacted with yet in the Batman games. Like,
could well be.
It's
a
not
going to
be a completely new, stupid Batman villain.
Yeah, a lot of rumors that it could be Hush, which is some lesser villain that was featured in a story. I don't know what the story was about, but that's cool. The big thing, though, as far as I could tell, was just Batmobile.
Batmobile!
Like, hey, let's drive the Batmobile now.
Yep.
They have Riddler Batmobile levels, which admittedly sound better than finding chattering Riddler teeth.
Yeah.
So there's that.
At least it's different by the fourth time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's Rocksteady. I mean, it's got to be better than whatever Arkham Origins was.
Yeah.
Because, it's the original guys.
More Arkham City. So
didn't they also get back the voice actors that they like couldn't get back for the other one?
Yeah, really
Which
weird.
Which is so weird. Yeah,
yeah. Especially with Mark Hamill, like, you know, that's the thing that we'll see what happens is Mark Hamill saying like, "I'm never going to do the Joker again because it kills me. Literally, I am dying. My voice is like," he's like, "my livelihood is dying because the Joker voice destroys me."
Well, I don't think Joker's supposed to be in this game.
Well, that, I mean, the premise from what I've heard from whatever, like, these are the leaks, right? Or no, this is from Game Informer, where it is Joker is dead from the last game, and all the villains are conspiring with each other to kill the Batman with the void of the Joker there. So, presumably, he's not going to be dead. Or at least you're going to get some flashback bits or whatever to when he was alive and... Who knows, but...
Yeah, they'll throw Troy Baker in there again.
Maybe. I mean, he wasn't...
He kind of overacted it a little bit.
But
yeah,
then you have a Kevin Conroy, which everybody is pumped about being Batman.
He is Batman, yeah. Yeah, it's one of those few roles where Troy Baker just couldn't quite knock it out of the park. Mm-hmm. He's a little too flowery, I think, with those kinds of things. I think it was just like too many flourishes and kind of hamming it up a little bit.
Well, maybe after this one he'll find the groove.
Maybe.
But I mean, the details are both massive and sparse. Like, coming from just the Game Informer things, you have the Batmobile, streets bigger, like you said, Joker challenges, Riddler challenges in the form of street racing things.
Justin Bieber drag racing.
Yeah, how much pot smoke is in the Batmobile?
I don't know.
The Batplane.
And also, you know, worth noting, not cross-gen. So, hey.
Yeah.
Real, actual next-gen game.
I find that to be most exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah, built on Unreal, of course.
Yeah. Great engine. So. Yeah, that'll be cool. It's exciting to finally be getting that trickle of next-gen announcements, because, you know, going through the lull period, I mean, you know, even though it's not reasonable, it's not rational, you start to think, like, oh, will there ever be games made for these things?
Right.
It's like, they're just collecting dust in my room. Not that I particularly care. I've had plenty to do recently, but...
Everybody forgot about... Yeah, it's the, oh, crap, I made a huge mistake.
Well, I've always been excited because, you know, I'm excited for the indie scene and all that stuff, and I just like hardware. I like kind of fetishize hardware a little bit, so I'm happy with it. But
unless it's Microsoft hardware,
that's true. I've flirted with the idea of getting at least a 360. There was a period of time where I was like really like right on the fence of getting one. I might, if it goes down. Here's the only 360 game that I can think of off the top of my head that I really do want to play is like Lost Odyssey. Try that out. A couple others, but I'm waiting for the $99 price point. Once it hits that, I'll grab one.
Yeah, Tales of Vesperia.
Yeah,
you get your Shadow Complex.
Yep, Shadow Complex.
Yeah, there's some big ones.
Used to be Fez, but, you know, that's multi-platform now.
Yeah, Mass Effect is on the other systems as well, so...
Yeah, so... So I've played... For the most part, I played the waiting game, and they really haven't missed out on much, but definitely if it hit that really low price point, like, if they ever do, like, a simple, you know, super stripped-down model that just, you know, $99, you know, grab it, throw a game in there and play it...
Mm-hmm.
I'll pounce and I'll get whatever I've been missing. But until that moment arrives, I'm keeping my distance just because, you know.
Geometry Wars. Bother.
Yeah, Geometry Wars. But, you know, at this point, you know, there's very little in the library that I haven't had the chance to experience. But Gears of War, yeah, I guess. I don't really care about that. Nor do I care that much about Halo. But
Halo.
Yeah, and I do recognize, I think it was the better, you know, the better piece of hardware. and not in terms of failure rates, but it was the better hardware last generation,
right.
You know, just in terms of, you know, better graphics card.
Sure.
You know, got, you know, managed to eke better performance out of most games. I don't think the Cell was a good choice.
Mm-hmm.
But by the same token, yeah, I definitely do have some fanboyish tendencies towards Sony.
Yeah.
But, you know, I freely admit that. So,
well, Wow. There's some good games on the 360.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, you know, when you're on top, or when, you know, I mean, you know, the Wii was a different category, but when you're on top of the market, you tend to get, you know, you get a slightly wider variety of titles. You get a couple, you know, interesting things in there. So at some point I want to explore all that, but not until it's super cheap.
Yeah.
But yeah.
It's got a good button.
You mean the button that turns it on?
Yeah.
Are you talking about the first gen? Are you talking about the second gen?
Both, actually. I think both gen have good buttons. The first one's got a good fat button. It's good finger groove in the second. I like touch capacitive buttons. I like them a lot, but I understand why people don't like them.
Yeah, I think they're annoying as fuck.
I love it. And the second one has some good ones. So
It's weird. I like soft buttons, like buttons that are on screens, and I like hard buttons, but I hate capacitive buttons. I hate like machined on symbols that apparently correspond to buttons that are not. It just makes me angry.
I love it. I love it, especially if you only press them very infrequently.
Mm. I hated them on the original PS3. I was thrilled to be rid of them.
Oh really?
Yep.
Why? They're so nice.
But they're so finicky. You don't know when you're pressing them.
You don't need to. You just lay your finger on there and it's like ready when you are.
Are you selling me a penis pill?
Yeah.
PS3 for 24-hour use.
Consult a doctor if it takes more than 4 hours to get your disc out of the drive.
Oh, man. Yeah. So one day I will break and I will get an Xbox and I will be able to say that I'm not just a total fanboy. But until that day, you can call me whatever
ambivalent.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's fair to say I'm console ambivalent. But yeah. Anyway, though, I think that really kind of covers it for all the news.
Yep.
Any other things you want to get off your chest?
Jeez. Do I? Man, I've been staring at this copy of Dino Crisis all night.
Didn't you hear that there might be a reboot?
There is a rumor going around about possibly a reboot for Dino Crisis.
That'd be pretty sick.
Would it? It would.
It would probably be a terrible game made by some shitty Canadian studio that was trying to ape the first one.
Shitty Canadian studios are what keeps Capcom in business right now, right?
Pretty much. What is it with them and farming their stuff out to Canadian studios? Like, what the fuck?
I think it's just Capcom doesn't know what they're doing anymore.
Yeah, pretty much. They're too busy making shitty ass mobile games. They're too busy making Breath of Fire 5 for smartphones, or Breath of Fire 6 rather. Yeah.
Too busy making health spas.
Yes, exactly.
I don't know. I mean, we'll see what happens. I'm sure Capcom has something up their sleeve, but I think it's just, you know, that shift towards publishing that a lot of Japanese studios tried to do and did so poorly. I think we've talked
they
about
really
this
did.
Before. Yeah,
it's quite sad.
But you know, hey. Devil May Cry was pretty good, the new one, and that game, Dead Rising 3, everybody says is a pretty good game as well.
Yeah, I heard the DLC is like almost better than the main game.
Yeah, so for two games that are not made in-house by Capcom, coming from long-standing franchises, and to be done better outside, it's pretty good.
Yeah, I guess so. Most of these big companies are just kind of husks at this point, really, is what it boils down to. All the creative people have left.
Absolutely,
It's so they're what the companies we used to love in name only.
Mm-hmm.
Their identity crisis shows through and through.
I think the bigger question is, where is Itagaki?
Probably touching ladies' butts and wearing sunglasses indoors.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Leather jackets.
Just continuing to not know how a human boob works. No, I mean, remember, wasn't it like Valhalla, Tokyo Vikings or something was his new company, and Devil's Third was supposed to be coming out a year or two ago.
God, who knows?
Is that not... Okay, well, speaking of former husks of companies, yeah.
He's always been kind of a weird dude.
Yeah.
One of the more eccentric amongst a crowd of quite eccentric people.
Yeah.
Not quite as eccentric as the Katamari guy, whose name escapes me right now.
Right.
Who came up on stage to show Nobi Nobi Boy with a hose with two balls attached to the end. Completely barefoot.
Nobi Nobi Boy was so good.
Yes, it was. Great game.
My God. No, it was a terrible game, but it was such an amazing experiment. Game.
Yeah, no, it's exactly. Crap. If you load it up, like I load it up sometimes, and they're like, oh, Nobi Nobi Boy has reached Neptune.
Where is Girl?
I think Girl is at Neptune right now.
Oh, okay. They're good. I'm glad she's still going.
Pluto is like, 100 years away or something. Okay. But yeah, people are still playing
that game.
There's
somebody out there still doing work, just still pooping out little, I don't know, eating dogs and guys on tractors and squeezing them all out.
I don't know. It's a great, I had a great time with it though. It was $5 well spent to me.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's all that's the only metric I have for whether I like something. Am I happy I bought it?
Is it better or worse than Nobi Nobi Boy?
Well, by that metric, nothing would ever succeed.
True.
Yeah. That dude is making another game. Did you hear about the other game that he's working on with like a 16 button controller?
No.
Yeah, he's working on another game about... I'm trying to remember how he described it. It's like the embarrassment of being a teenager.
Okay.
And it's about like finding old pornography magazines in the forest and just being embarrassed and, I don't know, pressing lots of buttons. And apparently he's making a special controller just for the game.
Well, that sounds great and not crazy at all. So
this was after he retired to go like design parks. Apparently he unretired and then decided he was going to make a game.
Yeah. Well, that sounds great. I cannot wait for the 16 button porn hiding game or whatever it is.
So, yes.
Looking forward to the future on that one. Anyway, this has been an exciting, illuminating, and enjoyable episode of Boss Barrel Radio. Jeff Brewer, thank you.
You're very welcome.
Okay, good. Whew, you're leaving me hanging there. It's like, oh, boy.
You're not welcome.
No!
You're not my dad.
I'm Griff Hoffman. This was our podcast. We'll see you next week, maybe.
Yes. We're doing it again. Rewind it. Start over.
That's right. Go. Ready? Here we go. And then Jeff said something about that Gabe Newell AMA.
Left for dead.
No!
Or the fourth one.